Got a sprain or an itch.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. A few years ago, an article was published in the medical magazine Practical Pain Management. It was written by Dr. Kern Olson, PhD, and it spanned 5 issues. Had Carmen and I decided just to read the article to you, it would have taken at least 3 hours and spanned over 7 shows. And after the first 10 minutes, you would probably have already changed radio stations. But we think that the information can be summarized and interesting enough to keep your attention at least for the first third or half of the show. So please bear with us. You will most likely be surprised how interesting it can truly be, even if you hated history in elementary through high school. You might be asking yourself, why is the history of pain important to me? First of all, pain can be scary, and it has triggered superstitious thinking in many, and that leads to fear. And building on that premise, fearful pain patients are often their own worst enemies because they feel like they have no control over their bodies, which only adds to their fear.
We have all heard that knowledge is a powerful tool, and possibly knowing some of the history of pain through the ages will be helpful.
At the beginning of each show, I start by saying that we hope that you'll find our show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. I hope that this is true for this show as well. So let's begin in the 17th century with René Descartes, who lived in the early 1600s and whose research and influence initiated new thinking about pain that had transcended 3 centuries. Now, Descartes was not a physician or even a psychologist. He is best known as a philosopher, mathematician, and scientist.
His initial foray into the subject of pain was published in his Principle of Philosophy, when he discussed pain in phantom limbs. The breakthrough here was that, by deduction, he noted that pain was felt in the brain, not the phantom limb.
At that time, church thinking in Europe was that pain was closely linked to original sin, and this had a very strong power over the scientific thought. He introduced his concept of the soul, that the source of pain was located in the pineal gland. He argued that persistent agitation of the nerves from a phantom limb produced sensations as if the phantom limb was still intact.
Descartes believed that pain from the phantom limb was real and not imaginary. He stated that pain was a perception of the soul. It is generally believed that Descartes incorporated the notion of the soul to avoid trouble with the church.
After all, he knew what happened to Galileo when his thinking was contrary to church belief. Anyway, he died at age 54, and some say that he was assassinated. Religion still considered pain to be rooted in the passion and death of Christ, that suffering individuals were closer to Christ, and that their anguish could be offered up in penance for early sins. Now, in another publication, L'Homme, meaning man in English, Descartes presented a model of pain in the form of a boy sticking his foot in a fire.
This model actually had a major influence on the later pain research. Descartes believed that as the fire came close to the foot, the painful stimulus resulted in the pulling of a delicate thread that ran up the boy's leg to the brain by the shortest route.
Another physician, Antonio Damasio, the M.W. Van Allen Professor of Neurology and Chairman of the Department of Neurology at the University of Iowa College of Medicine, published an article called Descartes, Error, Emotion, Reason, and the Human Brain. Now, in that article, he stated that the error is the separation between body and mind, and that suffering that comes from physical pain or emotional upheaval might exist separately from the body.
Damasio felt that the medical school in the United States largely ignore human dimensions and instead concentrate on the physiology and pathology of the body proper, and that the true value of Descartes' research and thinking is that he opened the way to subsequent research on the localization of cerebral functions.
The main importance of the Descartes research is that it marked a major milestone in pain research and application as he created controversy in the world of pain research, which contributed to more debate and ultimately progress. But let's shoot forward to the 18th century, sometimes called the Age of Enlightenment. You remember that from high school?
Apparently, there were three different medical philosophies in the 18th century. First, there was the mechanical school of thought, those who wanted to return to the notion that the human body functions as a simple machine.
Later, there was the vitalist school of thinking, where the idea was that of sensitivity, which included the simultaneous concepts of physiology as well as psychology.
And finally, the minority school of thought, which argued that nature was more passive. They felt that mechanical explanations were correct and considered the soul to be directly responsible for all organic functions.
Further, they believed it made pain an important sign in illness as a result of internal strife. Now this brings up Albrecht von Haller. He was interested in the reactions of fibers and how to distinguish between the irritability or contractibility of muscle fiber and the excitability, also called sensitivity, of nerve fibers. Von Haller felt that only the nerves are sensitive, while muscle fibers are irritable.
In other words, von Haller was the first person to discover that only nerves produce sensation and only those parts of the body connected to the nervous system can undergo a sensation.
In the late 1700s, Pierre-Jean Georges Cabanis incorporated a psychophysiological approach to pain, which included the emotional component. In Cabanis's view, pain was useful. It instilled stability, balance, and equilibrium to the nerves and the muscular systems. This idea of the usefulness of pain led to the therapeutic techniques of electrical shock and stimulation.
However, Cabanis also felt that pain could be generated spontaneously in the brain and provoke pains that were real. In other words, hypochondria, where pain is not a pure physiological reaction to a stimulus, but requires the mental activity of the patient.
Cabanis' work led to new techniques of treatment, such as using electrical stimulation for the treatment of pain. We still use TENS units. He introduced the concept of psychophysiology and the emotional components of pain. Now, Javier Bichat, also in the late 1700s, worked on the two nervous systems, that is, the sympathetic and parasympathetic, and their relationship. He believed the two systems were very distinct, each having two principal centers, one in the brain and the other in the ganglions.
Bichat's work complemented the work of Cabanis, which led to a more global psychophysiological approach to pain treatment. And this approach also led to the increasing use of opium as a treatment option, which was not present in the 17th century.
The work of Cabanis and Bichat represented the beginning of an important trend in pain treatment, the holistic and multidisciplinary approach. Now we enter the 19th century. Physicians began pursuing the study of pain symptoms.
Researchers began to focus on the links between physical and mental aspects of pain. It is at this time that clinics were developed to treat pain.
Some researchers, such as Johannes Müller and Maximilian von Frey, saw pain as an independent sensation with its own sensory apparatus. Again, the church enters the fray and opposed materialism and spiritualism and was concerned that research was reducing the mental aspects of pain to a more physiological, chemical level. At this point in time, the church wanted to keep the concept of the soul, which, remember, was introduced by René Descartes in the 17th century.
It was at this time in history that they were advanced in microscopy from the original microscope that Antony van Leeuwenhoek invented in the mid-1600s. Johannes Müller concluded that there were specific energy within the nerve fiber and that the paths of nerve fibers were rigorously ordered.
This research led to his summation that there were specific fibers for pain or receptors, the neuroreceptors, for painful sensations. This was a major step forward in understanding pain transmission and led Müller to formulate his law of specific nerve energies. Müller used amputees in his research. he examined the effects of a stimulus that was applied to an area restricted to the branches of the nerves found below the stimulation point. The sensations received by the brain were the same as with the stump intact.
Mueller then proposed a model where each posterior root ganglion would function like a semiconductor of the sensation. This appeared to be the first model describing the gait theory of pain.
Mueller believed that the reaction of a feeling produced by a sensory nerve would occur in the sensory nerves and not the motor nerves. So here's our first mention of two separate types of nerves, sensory and motor nerves. Mueller believed that pain was not imaginary and that pain could occur without an external stimulus. Mueller's conclusion about pain could actually be traced back to Descartes again.
Remember Descartes from the beginning of the show? At some point in the middle of the 19th century, there was a debate over whether pain could be avoided or whether it was predetermined by fate.
Fatalism implies that we do not choose pain, but that it happens anyway, as in the case of war. As a result of lessons learned on the battlefield, many new treatment options were introduced, including nitrous oxide, the use of morphine, and ether. By the end of the 19th century, research started to focus on receptors that were specific to pain.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. Carmen and I have been talking about the history of chronic pain, and we know that it may have been boring you, but stick around some more, and we will unbore you, if there is such a word, very soon.
More advances in microscopy allow the identification of neural structures, which were very different from one another. Mueller felt that these structures served very different functions, and this research represented another major step towards the theory of specificity.
We come to Maximilian von Frey, who was trying to identify particular points on the skin which responded specifically to one of the four cutaneous sensations, that was being touch, heat, cold, and pain. Von Frey felt that pain was perceived when the stimulus went beyond a certain threshold, and this led to his conclusion that pain results from the stimulation of specific organs.
This theory has been generally discounted, but his work contributed to the understanding of sensory receptors and the measurements of insensitivities of stimuli and sensory thresholds.
Onward to Alfred Goldscheider, who lived from 1858 to 1935. The first research finding was that the increase of pain upon repeated applications of a stimulus was out of proportion with the intensity of the stimulus. Goldscheider believed this cumulative process acted at the spinal cord and the brain. He also found that when pressure was applied to the skin with the head of a pin, the subject initially felt pressure, followed shortly by the sensation of pain.
In 1920, he postulated that the difference perceived by tickling, touch, and pain was not due to specific receptors, but due to special pathways that depend on stimulus intensity.
The more frequently a receptor or fiber reacted in a given direction, the more the effects of stimuli would tend to take a specific path. The 20th century brought emphasis on problems of communication, speed, and efficiency. There were two dominant pathways that pain research focused on during the first half of the 20th century.
First was the temporal aspect of pain mechanism, which shifted the focus from specific receptors, transmission pathways, and included studying the connection between mental processes and pain, both intellectual and emotional.
Then the infamous Darwin theory of evolution comes into play. It introduced the notion of adaptation in the transmission of sensations and viewed the nervous system as a defense against aggression. Henry Head, an apt name for this researcher, proposed a model indicating the relationship between the cortex of the brain and the thalamus in the brain.
He felt that thalamic lesions seemed to modify the emotional or affective tone to any perceived sensation. He concluded that the thalamus appeared to influence or amplify sensations transmitted by afferent tracts.
Finally, Head's work should be remembered for its recognition of the role of evolution and that man's evolutionary goal was to ultimately control his emotions and his instincts. A lot of pithy stuff here, and we won't bore you with more of this.
Charles Sherrington was a Cambridge neurophysiologist who best known work was the integrative action of the nervous system, published in 1908, in which he transposed the theory of evolution to the level of the neuron and the synapse. He coined the term synapse for the space separating two nerves.
Sherrington concluded that the nervous system did operate as a single integrated whole, and he actually received the Nobel Prize for Physiology or Medicine in 1932 as a result of this work. Sherrington classified stimuli on the basis of their origins into three categories.
Proprioceptive receptors, where stimuli arise from the organic deep in the body, muscles, joints, tendons, and blood vessels. Exteroceptive receptors, which are found over the entire surface of the body, and interoceptive receptors, which includes digestion and absorption and are now known as the visceral senses.
In the Loesser's model of pain, nociception is at the center. This model starts with a physiological stimulus that leads to the sensory response called pain, and it results in suffering. So we're back to the start. So we need to define pain itself.
The problem is that there are still several different definitions. The most commonly accepted is that pain is an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or described in terms of such damage.
It's also been added that pain is a subjective experience that is associated with our perception of the event and influenced by our past experiences. Definitions are, well, defining and are often restrictive. For example, presently we need to differentiate acute from chronic pain.
Many states, for example, use the term acute to mean any pain that lasts for less than 3 months and chronic as pain that lasts beyond 3 months.
But really, we could also define acute pain as the normal response to an event such as trauma or surgery, as compared with abnormal persistent pain that continues beyond the expected time frame.
Many agree that putting a specific time restraint to define the types of pain as inappropriate and suggested that chronic pain be defined as pain that persists longer than 1 month beyond a normal healing period or that is associated with pathological process that causes continuous or recurring pain over months or years.
I personally like that definition much better and feel that it's more appropriate and of better use. The point is that we really do need to distinguish the two types of pain because acute pain plays a protective role and acts as an alarm. It also allows us to recognize that there's a problem.
However, chronic pain in and of itself does not appear to play a protective role if it persists long as a triggering event is resolved. We now know that for painful stimulation to reach consciousness, it has to be influenced by mechanisms within the central nervous system.
And we need to understand the process of the painful stimulus as it travels from the periphery to the higher centers of the brain. There are excitatory and inhibitory mechanisms which may increase or reduce the nociceptive signal. Remember that word from the beginning of the show that translates into more or less intense pain? To understand this, we need to know how the energy of a stimulus transfers into an electrical response.
So let's start at the receptor cell, whichever it is. For ease, think of it as a cell near the surface of the skin. Let us call the excitatory stimulus a lead match touched to the area of the skin.
According to current thinking, the nociceptor has more than one transduction mechanism that results from direct excitation or through receptor cells. A little confusing, I know, but continuous painful stimulation results in sensitizing the central nervous system, and that contributes to the pain experience. Now, have you ever heard the term radiating pain? If you've ever suffered from chronic pain and visited your physician, he or she may have asked you if the pain radiates anywhere. It is especially prevalent in patients who present with severe back or neck injuries.
The condition has different transmission speeds, and the precise location does not assume the same importance. Further, radiating pain often develops gradually. The body reacts instinctively to radiating pain that results in splinting or chronic muscle contraction.
Remember, the body will protect itself when injured by forming a natural splint, which compounds the pain experience by adding another source of pain. The path radiating pain follows throughout the different zones and will pass through different segments of the spinal cord. To understand this, we have to look at dermatomes. And we have to look at something called temporal summation. Now, don't try to memorize that term. Just try to understand it as we describe its importance.
It results from different speeds between the faster and slower nerve fibers. High-frequency, repetitive, nociceptive afferent stimulation will produce a temporal summation of the nociceptive afferent impulses originating from the slower fibers.
This accumulation of activity within the spinal cord is aptly called the windup, kind of like what a baseball pitcher does to increase the speed of his pitch. This contributes to spinal sensitization. We also have spinal sensitization, which is simply an increase in excitability and spontaneous discharge from a part of the nerves in the spinal cord.
Recent research has suggested that fibromyalgia patients may have a deficit in the inhibitory system, which is not found in other pain conditions.
There is transmission of nerve signals from the peripheral to the central nervous system. And remember that this pain signal is influenced by a number of chemicals found along the pathways that can stimulate or sensitize the nociceptor.
As we follow the pain signal as it continues to the region of the spinal cord where the fibers enter the spinal cord from the periphery, the fibers are separated into two groups.
I know we're getting to the end here. There are the large A-beta and the smaller fibers called the A-delta and C-fibers. It's in an area called the dorsal horn where the different fibers are coming together from different systems and connect with each other. Therefore, muscular pain could be worsened by new visceral pain and even vice versa.
So you can experience multiple types of pain, which can act in an additive fashion as the pain experience reaches consciousness.
As we have only a half-hour show, it's really difficult to cover all of the subjects as expansive as chronic pain, its history, description, and its causes. So we'll try to use future shows to expand on all of this.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com.
HeyDoc.com.
Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.